There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with, for a change, Greg Kruminski and Colin Andrews.
Hey.
Hey, we're back.
We're back again.
Yep.
For episode, 281 or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Hard to believe we started this whole process back during COVID.
Well, there was nothing else to do.
No, that's right.
Right? Yep. Like nobody was coming in the office. Parking was a breeze.
Oh, man. Getting downtown in minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
The parkades that were open were charging like $5 for parking.
I really miss the pandemic.
There were some good things about it, you know.
My youngest daughter was learning to drive at exactly that time, and it was fantastic. And there's like nobody on the road.
I feel like learning to drive during a zombie apocalypse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
cool. Well, today we're not talking about that. Today we're talking about the Canada Pension Plan.
Yep.
And I got a question for you, Greg. You're collecting Canada Pension Plan.
I am indeed.
Yeah. So this is near and dear to your heart right now?
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm engaged.
Right. And I mean, all Canadians should be.
Yes.
I mean, the Canada Pension Plan, what is it? Well, it's something that is provided to basically all Canadians.
Yeah.
And so we're going to dig in how the CPP is managed,
yep,
what it costs, who's responsible for it, how its performance stacks up against low-cost index investing,
right,
and even against the philosophies of guys like David Booth and Eugene Fama and the minds behind dimensional fund advisors.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to kick this off by talking about a guy named Steve Edmondson.
Who?
Steve Edmondson.
Who?
You may ask, who is Steve Edmondson? Steve Edmondson is the investment manager for the Nevada Public Employees Retirement System.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been doing this job since 2005. So, you know, 20 years.
Yep.
And there's an article. I was introduced to this fellow almost 10 years ago. In 2016, there was an article. The title was, "What Does Nevada's $35 Billion Fund Manager Do All Day?" Nothing.
Yep.
And so this was an article. So that obviously caught our attention.
Well, the subtitle is BLT or tuna.
Right.
That also caught my attention.
Exactly. Yeah. The implication being there is like his biggest decision all day is what to have for lunch. Anyway, so back in 2016, when this article was published, the pension fund that Steve Edmondson managed was worth about $35 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the only employee in the investment, you know, committee of that particular fund. So, and the reason for that is because he took an entirely passive approach to investing. I believe the investment strategy had something like, 70% global stocks and 30% U.S. Treasury bonds. Mm-hmm. And rather than comparing the indexes to his performance to a return, basically, they had originally set up an actuarial goal of achieving 7.25% per year over time in that particular fund, which they've handled very nicely.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that's interesting because when you think about it, okay, so the total cost of managing that particular fund would be the very small expense ratios in the index funds that he was using, maybe a few basis points, probably, and his salary, which, who knows? Let's give him $500,000 a year just for doing a good job. And, you know, so that's the total cost on a $35 billion fund. So it was a very interesting article. You know, it basically said outright that he didn't have a lot to do when you're passively investing in indexes. Didn't have a lot to do, and lunch was the biggest decision of the day. Now, listen, that was 2016. And in all fairness, since then, the fund has branched out a little bit. And so they'd now include an allocation of 6% to real estate, mm-hmm, and 6% to private equity. And his justification for doing that was that it was a way to try to achieve the same basic returns with lower volatility because, a portfolio of you know, 70% global stocks could be relatively volatile in certain years. And to accomplish that, he's had to hire a second person. So now there's
two of them.
The fund has grown to $60 billion, you know, from $35 billion back in 2016. And of course, the fund grows by contributions, with contributions as well as performance. And then, of course, funds leave as they're paid out to beneficiaries. It just sort of highlights how it doesn't have to be complex, you know, to achieve reasonable results. And the fund has well surpassed the 7.25% return objective that they had set for themselves decades ago. And I think the actual return over the past 30 years is something in the order of 9% or something like that.
Which sort of mirrors what the S&P 500 has done too.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So so basically, that's just a case study of how you don't need to make things complex in order to have a very acceptable return, you know, from a large portfolio.
Well, I like in the article, he talks about, this is dated back again to 2016.
Yes.
And the question the reporter asked, will the 2016 elections affect his portfolio? And the answer was no. Will oil prices? The answer was no. That's kind of how we view things. You know, there's different things that come in the headlines. We're not immune to them.
Yep.
But, you know, a question we get all the time is like, is this a good time to invest? Is this not a good time to invest? All market timing related questions, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So in the article that you mentioned, Mr. Edmondson, if he had charged or done an outsourcing model similar to what Wall Street does, the costs would have ballooned, right, to hundreds of millions of dollars.
Exactly, yeah.
Not the $18 million a year of budget.
Yes.
So instead, sticking to that lean structure and broad index exposure, he just performed competitively, right?
I love in the article too, they talk about on his desk was an inbox, a stapler, a tin cup of paper clips, and business cards.
Well,
you know, so.
I mean, I guess because he's in charge of ordering the office supplies too.
I guess so.
Pretty minimalist.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, let's branch that into the Canada Pension Plan.
Yeah.
So the Canada Pension Plan, or CPP, is the mandatory national retirement plan for working Canadians where employees and employers contribute. What's that?
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, you cut me off there.
I know I did.
Wait, was there something you wanted to say?
Well, I was just going to say, which we're all painfully aware of our contributions.
Yes, we all contribute to this. And, you know, there's been some debate over the years. Is the Canada Pension Plan fully funded? Will it be around when I retire? Those types of questions, right? But each of the employees and employers contribute 5.95% of earnings up to about $68,500 in earnings in 2025, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the contributions are pooled and they're invested by this independent Crown Corporation, which is called the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board, or CPPIB.
Right.
So this CPPIB was set up in 1997 to invest excess contributions professionally. Because before that, what they would do was just buy government bonds.
Yeah. And that, we can all agree, was a bad idea.
Well, I mean, they're stable. Government bonds are stable. But if you're looking for higher expected rates of return, you're not going to get them out of low-risk, stable government bonds.
Particularly in an inflationary environment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, where is the CPPIB headquartered? Well, I mean, in Toronto.
Yes.
But they have offices in London, Hong Kong, San Francisco. And it manages, how much is the CPPIB?
Up they're now, as of today, about $730 billion.
With a B.
With a B, billion.
Yeah. It's interesting. We were in London last June, and just for a couple of days.
London, England.
London, England, not London, Ontario.
Yeah.
And I did see the Canada Pension Plan office, and I thought, what is that doing here?
Yep.
Strange. But the CPPIB is overseen by an independent board of directors, not politicians, which is really important, right?
Yeah, it's a relief.
And it reports annually to Parliament and to Canadians at large. And it's really important that we keep that independence in that area.
Yeah.
So let's talk about costs of the CPP, you know, because there are costs, right?
Sure.
There's costs in our world too. People will say, well, how much do you charge for your services?
Mm-hmm.
We say, well, on average, about 1%.
Yep.
Depends on the size of the portfolio, but let's just say 1%, right? True. So,
just a note there.
Yep.
Maybe it starts at 1%, but of course, as the asset pool grows, as investors have more and more money to invest, the actual percentage cost goes down typically.
Yeah, so if you're north of $10 million, it goes down to like 0.25.
Right.
Quite a significant difference.
Which is institutional type pricing.
Right. And so Canada Pension Plan Investment Board's internal operating cost is kind of similar, 0.26%.
Yep.
So that sounds reasonable, right?
Yep.
But that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly.
Right? Because that doesn't include the operating expenses of $1.8 billion.
Yep.
External management fees of another $1.8 billion. Performance fees to external managers of $2.2 billion. And then just transaction costs of $730 million. Yep. So it's not 0.26%.
No.
Where's that add up to?
Basically, you're looking at, I think on the recent numbers I looked at, the all-in costs are about $7 billion a year.
Wow.
Okay, so roughly 1% of assets.
Yeah.
You know, so 1% of assets is what individual investors, you know, with $500,000 to invest are paying typically.
Yeah.
You'd think that on a $730 billion fund, there might be some efficiencies.
Yeah.
Again, so it seems like a big number to me.
Well, if they transferred the Canada Pension Plan to Canvas Wealth, we would manage it for 0.25%.
There you go.
And all Canadians would save, 75 basis points.
Exactly. And that number, by the way, the Fraser Institute, you know, published a report looking at the Canada Pension Plan back in 2023. And they estimated, again, the all-in costs anywhere for up to 1.06% of assets in certain years.
Mm-hmm. So not cheap.
No.
And a far cry from 5 basis points that you might pay on a very broad index fund.
Exactly. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But I guess the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board argues that it's, you know, it's global, it's active, it's in private markets, and those demand higher costs, and that it hopes to earn those costs back in extra returns.
Right. So, well, let's talk a little bit about how the fund has performed. So over the last 10 years, and this is 10 years to the end of March of 2025, because that's the board's fiscal year, it delivered about 9.2% annualized net return after all costs.
Pretty good.
And that is good, you know, and it's good in absolute. So, you know, but unfortunately, when you are spending that kind of money, up to $7 billion in costs, then you need to know how it's performed against a portfolio where you'd maybe not done any active management.
Right, right. So they compare themselves to a reference portfolio, which is just a passive global mix of equities and bonds.
Yeah.
Or some people just think of equities, just use the word stocks, right? Because that gets a little confusing sometimes.
Yeah.
And some years the fund outperforms it, others it doesn't.
Yeah.
So for instance, in fiscal year 2024, the reference portfolio outperformed the Canada Pension Plan investments by almost 12 percentage points.
Yep.
Not 12 basis points.
No.
12 percentage points.
That's right. The pension plan earned 8%. The reference portfolio, 19.9%.
That's huge. That's 1,200 basis points.
That's right.
Right? So over the long run, CPPIB, that's a tongue twister.
It is.
The net value added relative to that benchmark is modest, right?
Well, yeah. And you know, you can, you know, we have this expression, you know, if you torture the data long enough, it'll confess to anything.
Yeah.
You know, so I've looked back here, I've got the numbers for the performance of the fund every year from 2016 to 2025, that 10-year period. And there are years when the fund outperformed handily.
Sure.
Handily. For example, in 2020, the fund did 3.1%. The reference portfolio did negative 3.1%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a 6% outperformance.
Sure.
However, in 2021, the fund underperformed by 10%.
Right.
Okay. For 2022 and 2023, the fund outperformed by 2.1% and 1.3% respectively. But as you mentioned, in 2024 and then 2025, the fund underperformed by negative 11.9% in 24 and negative 1.6% in 25. So the jury is out probably on whether or not, you know, this, this is a 10-year period, whether the same, you know, what would hold true over a 20-year period. Mm. But one interesting thing, and again, I don't want to be overly cynical because the results from the Canada Pension Plan have been pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, no complaints about you know, 8.3% annually over 10 years. But you do have to ask the question, is like employing something, I believe they employ over 2,000 people in order to run this investment plan. They spend, as we talked about, $4.7 billion in direct costs plus other costs, you know, leading up to possibly close to $7 billion overall. And what do we all get for that? You know, and that has to be the question.
Well, and that's a good question because I don't know if people really care. You know,
that's right.
They only care that the Canada Pension Plan will be there to fund their retirements when it starts paying them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm not sure if, like, you could, even if they charged 2%, I don't know if people would care as long as they were able to meet their funding obligations.
Exactly.
Right. Now, people in our world would care, you know, if we said, oh, our fees are going to go from 1% to 2%.
Yeah.
They'd say, whoa, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But, but even then, I don't know if they'd care because it's just another version of it. You know, we get those questions all the time, like, is this a good time to invest in stocks or bonds or real estate, et cetera, crypto, energy, oil, gold, silver, tungsten. Is tungsten a thing?
Could be.
You know, but I think the root cause of, or the root of that question is, am I going to be okay?
That's right.
So I think most Canadians, as long as the pension plan is able to fund the payments,
yeah,
that's the important thing, right?
Well, and that kind of takes me back to the simplicity and the brilliance of the Nevada pension fund, because they didn't set, well, our goal is to outperform the markets by 1.4% or anything like that. Their goal was to achieve a 7.25% annualized return over a long period of time. And that's what they would need, you know, actuarially to meet their, you know, their pension, you know, obligations in the future. And so, you know, just like when we do financial plans for people, we don't say, oh, okay, well, you know, your target is to beat the benchmark by 1% to justify fees or what have you. It's, this is the return that you need, you know, to achieve, or we're trying to achieve in order to meet your financial goals.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's kind of an interestingly different approach.
Yeah. Well, and a big core component of the way that that we like to manage money is through companies like Dimensional Fund Advisors,
right? Yeah.
So maybe we can talk about Eugene Fama and David Booth for a minute.
Absolutely. And listen, as we've talked many, many times on the podcast, Eugene Fama's efficient market hypothesis suggests that markets incorporate all known information, so consistent outperformance through active management would be expected to be rare.
Yeah. Not impossible.
No. No, that's right. And David Booth, who was the co-founder of Dimensional Fund Advisors, took that research and he built an investment philosophy around that model, you know, trying to capture broad market and factor returns, things like company size, you know, value or relative price and profitability, and try to do that systematically at a low cost.
Yeah. So in their view, the job isn't to outsmart markets. We don't believe that we're any smarter than anybody else in the market.
Right.
We don't believe we have access to this private information that others don't, right?
Yep.
So it's just to harness risk factors efficiently. And we've talked about those a lot, those premiums of return or factors of return, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, incorporating those factors, keeping fees low and turnover low, those are important. Like, you know, the one item that stuck out to me was the trade cost or transaction cost of $750 million.
Yeah.
That's a huge trade expense ratio.
For sure. Right?
But this is where the comparison kind of bites, because if most of CPP's returns can be explained by these same broad market and factors exposures, because that's what they're trying to do with a global portfolio, trying to capture different risk premiums, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then why pay 1% in annual costs to do it is the question, right?
Yeah.
As Fama might say, you don't need to outguess the market to do well in it. And David Booth would add, markets work if you let them.
Yeah. Yeah, right on.
Right. So the debate becomes a complexity versus simplicity debate.
Yeah.
And so, Greg, given all this, I guess the question is, who's got the better model? Is Canada Pension Plan or the Nevada Pension Plan?
Yeah. And I guess the answer is, I mean, it depends on what you value. You know, the Canada Pension Plan scale gives it lots of access to things like private equity, infrastructure, and global deals that maybe small investors can't touch. which could add return and diversification or lower risk, some combination of all of those. Mm-hmm. But the trade-off is potentially a much higher cost, much more complexity, and governance risk.
Yeah.
Just because of the size of it. Yeah.
And you're seeing governance risk more so in the states right now with the U.S. Federal Reserve and current administration. You know, that's a whole other, that's probably a whole other podcast. But meanwhile, Nevada runs a set it and forget it strategy, something that we would align to, right?
Yep.
Keep your fees low, keep your expenses low, and performance often matches or beats more expensive funds. So it's really the FAMA French or FAMA Booth ideal in practice. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and so the core question is whether the Canada Pension Plan's extra cost translates into consistent risk-adjusted outperformance. And I think when we look at history and just going back over the last 10 years, you can see it's not necessarily a sure thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the long-term average net of all costs, that looks similar to a global, I don't know, 60-40 or 70-30, you know, portfolio. And that's an index, you know, that that has virtually no cost associated with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So for our listeners, for retail investors listening, I guess that's the lesson. You don't need a billion-dollar staff to build wealth, just discipline, diversification, and patience, because markets are cyclical.
Yep.
Right?
Yep, exactly.
So what have we learned today? Well, we've learned that the CPP is professionally managed, of course.
Yep.
It is diversified globally, which you'd expect.
Yep.
And it's independent from government.
Right on.
Right? And its true costs of management are closer to 1% of its assets once you include external and performance fees.
Yep.
Over the last decade, it has delivered solid returns, right?
Like sure.
Around 9% annualized. Nothing wrong with that. But not always better than a low-cost global index, right?
Right.
And Nevada's fund shows a lean, disciplined, low-fee model can, in lots of times, achieve strong results too, right?
Right.
So, and I guess you add that to DFA's research, which reminds us that markets reward discipline and diversification, not complexity or cost.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't want to leave here, you know, having people think, oh, that we think the CPP is, you know, or the board is running the fund badly, because we don't. And if they can at least match net returns with that of a passive index, you know, after fees, then that's okay too, you know, but it basically, so it's not that the CPP is bad. It's not that Nevada's approach is perfect. It's just that you have to look at all of the factors, cost, governance, and the overall philosophy that matters almost as much as, you know, the assets themselves.
Yeah, for sure. You're right. We're not here to bash the CPP. Well, because it's pointless.
Well, and I'm delighted that they earned 9.3% last year, because that means that, you know, I don't have to worry about whether there'll be money to pay for me. Yeah. So from a very selfish, self-centered, you know, egotistical standpoint,
yeah,
it's like, you know, good for them.
So tell us what else, other things that you're self-centered about, Greg?
Well, just about everything.
Yeah. So yeah, it just highlights some structural things, which is just sticking to the structure,
yep,
sticking to simplicity, and sticking to your plan. Those are things that we would highlight in investment management for people that we work for,
yep,
right? You've had questions over the years, like somebody say, well, you know, we've got a lot of this XYZ ETF or XYZ yep index portfolio. When should we diversify away from it? And what was your...
I used to... That's right. Yeah. So people would say, okay, yeah, we've got this this balanced fund or something like that, low-cost diversified fund. And, you know, we've got $500,000 in it. Like, at what point do we start diversifying away? And I told them, I think, you know, around $100 million or so, we can start looking at something else. You know, and that's the point, is that you don't have to have $100 million to have an institutional quality, well-diversified, low-cost portfolio that will capture the market returns and, mm-hmm, you know, and let you sleep at night, hopefully.
Yeah. 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 Right on.
Okay.
Well, I think that's it.
Sure.
Yeah. Should we, what else should we bash next week?
I don't know. We'll have to think about it. Yeah. We'll come up with something. We'll come up with something to bash.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth, portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.